Support comes from the St. Louis Public Library Foundation. During these challenging times, free access to digital resources is a necessity. You can help our community stay connected. Support your St. Louis Public Library at slpl.org.
This is St. Louis on the Air from St. Louis Public Radio. I'm Elaine Cha. This winter, plunging temperatures put our region through day after day of bitter cold. Here in St. Louis City, the freeze activated the new Code Blue protocol, opening more shelter beds and dispatching warming buses. But those resources didn't reach everyone. For people living without homes, in camping tents, vacant buildings, or encampments, it's just a matter of time until the cold becomes more than just an annoyance. That's what happened last year to Kevin Roberts.
I thought my feet was just cold, but actually they was frozen. And I just thought it was cold, so I'd be outside for a long period of time. I wasn't wearing the proper socks, wasn't wearing socks like I should do, and wasn't changing them. You know, I found out a lot of stuff after I had my toes cut off.
And that was Kevin Roberts speaking this morning from the encampment on Cass Avenue with our producer, Danny Wisentowski. The fact is, the longer your body is exposed to the cold, especially if you aren't dressed properly, the closer you get to reaching the point of frostbite. Now, frostbite isn't just painful. It can lead to losing fingers and toes, even amputations of entire limbs. Each year, volunteer groups conduct winter outreach to locate people wherever they are and try to bring them to shelter, warmth, or medical care. And with me now to talk about frostbite among St. Louis's homeless population this winter and the efforts to help people survive it, I'm joined by STLPR health reporter Sarah Fenton. Sarah, welcome.
Hi.
So your reporting on frostbite was published earlier this week, and it's titled, "For Some St. Louisans Living on the Street, Frostbite Can Cause Lasting Harm." And that reporting begins with Tanya. Tanya's suffering from frostbite. You describe the skin of her hands as looking like they've been dipped in wax. How did you meet Tanya, Sarah?
Well, I originally started looking into the story because of a sort of offhand comment from another reporter who met someone who runs a drop-in shelter on the west side. Her name's Kim Jane. She's with the Wellston Loop Community Development Corporation, which is like a drop-in shelter, and she's been working a lot to get a new shelter opened overnight on the west side during cold weather especially. And so I met Tanya during a press conference about the need for a shelter up there, and the people who run the shelter, sorry, I have a frog in my throat. The people who run the shelter up there had a press conference that was calling for one, and it included unhoused people. And I was not looking to find someone with frostbite. But what I've found is, like, this issue isn't an uncommon one. These people aren't difficult to find if you're working with people on the street.
Mm-hmm. What did you learn, Sarah, about what Tanya has experienced this winter?
So Tanya's been in town for, I think, about a year or so, and she had an experience like a lot of people that we've met in reporting, in that she was sometimes sleeping on porches, sometimes sleeping on the streets, and at a certain point she was just talking like, you know, I have layers of gloves on, layers of socks on, but it still just, like, isn't enough, she, like a lot of people, has dealt with frostbite, and I don't know how serious it is. I'm not a doctor. But the way it sort of appeared was, like, the tips of her fingers were white. Mm-hmm. And how I understand it is that there's sort of, like, different levels of frostbite, like burns, and people deal with, like, a whole spectrum of issues when it comes to that.
Well, speaking of doctors, we do have one in the studio today, and I'd like to invite him to join us. Dr. Josh Fornelius is a volunteer with StreetMed STL, and this is an organization that provides medical care and outreach services to people living on the streets. Dr. Fornelius, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me.
So Sarah just got into some of the details around frostbite, but can you provide, from a medical perspective, what exactly frostbite is and what is happening to our skin, our largest organ, when it encounters the cold?
Absolutely. So, like Sarah said, frostbite kind of exists on a spectrum, and we can think of it occurring in four progressive and overlapping stages. The first stage of frostbite we call the pre-freeze stage, and that's when the internal temperature of the tissues in our body, particularly fingers, toes, the most at risk, the temperature in those tissues drops. And when the temperature drops, the body responds through a mechanism called vasoconstriction, which is narrowing of the blood vessels. And in this pre-freeze first stage, when the vessels constrict, the fingers, for example, can turn white. We can lose sensation. That's where the numbness comes from. And it can also be extra painful. We call it hyperalgesia, where very light touches can cause severe pain. If someone is in the pre-freeze stage, no ice crystals have developed in the tissues, and that can be reversible with proper warmth. If cold exposure continues, the actual frostbite is when the water in our body, because our body is primarily made of water, actually starts to freeze and tissues crystallize. When that happens is when damage starts to occur. And it's not a binary thing. It can be progressive and it looks different for each person, but it's during the crystal formation when damage starts to occur, and if left untreated can progress to frank necrosis, mummified fingers, you know, horrible things like this.
Mm-hmm. Dr. Fornelius, you have treated people, you know, with symptoms similar to the ones that Sarah described with Tanya. Do those details sound familiar to you in the patients that you have seen during winter outreach here in the St. Louis area?
Absolutely. Unfortunately, her story is not unique. I have personally cared for many people who have injuries of exposure, frostbite, both on street outreach and during my time working as a physician at SLU Hospital.
Mm-hmm. Talk to us a little bit about what StreetMed STL does sort of as a whole and how this winter outreach is a seasonal response to the needs.
Absolutely. So StreetMed St. Louis is a not-profit healthcare organization. I believe Sarah referred to it in her article as a collective, and I really like that. But our primary goal is to seek out people where they live and provide medical care as best as we can. We do provide direct, you know, physician services, trying to treat acute and chronic conditions as best as we can. But healthcare is more than just medications and lab checks. It's also providing materials for existence living out on the street. Mm-hmm. So as part of our outreach, we hand out things like hand warmers, blankets, warm weather clothing in the winter months, and in the summer, things like bug spray, tents, tarps, anything that we can really get our hands on to help.
Mm-hmm. Sarah, in your piece last week, you wrote about StreetMed STL, and you spoke with its founder, Dr. Jonathan Nolan.
Oh, Nathaniel Nolan.
I'm sorry, yeah. Nathaniel Nolan. What did you learn from Dr. Nolan about his work and this work overall?
Well, when I first called Dr. Nolan, he mentioned something that I've been thinking about a lot, which is there's sort of two issues here, and there's the immediate situation of, you know, people have frostbite when they live on the streets, and it's this terrible, sad thing, and it's, upsetting, and it can be debilitating and, you know, cause problems that last for the rest of somebody's life. But it's a symptom of something bigger where, we have this whole group of people in our community that are dealing with this. And he said something like, the biggest question is how our country is allowing this to happen, which is a big, it's a huge question. And it was something that was kind of difficult for me in the story, because I was writing about this sort of small slice of a problem. And had to accept that I couldn't, you know, find the solution to homelessness in, you know, a two 1,000-word story. Mm-hmm. And so, but it was something that I thought about throughout my whole reporting, because I had gotten in touch with him really early on, and it was something that I tried to keep in mind.
I'm going to try to return to that. One thing I want to make sure we get to, Dr. Fornelius, is given the season that we're in now, and in terms of symptoms, what are you looking for when you treat someone who's living outdoors during a period of dangerous cold?
It's a great question, and it can be very challenging when we're trying to treat the unhoused, because for those who are living out of doors and staying in a tent, you know, opening that tent and losing any retained warmth, it's a cost-benefit analysis that the individual has to make. In terms of specifics, when we're assessing a patient out of doors with concern for frostbite, what I'm looking for is to look at the skin directly and looking for the signs of poor tissue perfusion, which would be discoloration, numbness, like I had mentioned earlier. If we're in stage one, where it's just those symptoms I mentioned, providing active warming can sometimes reverse any problem that's happening. If I start to see blistering or severe discoloration, typically we'll counsel the patient that this looks like severe frostbite and you should probably seek care in the emergency room.
Mm-hmm. We're talking today with Dr. Josh Fornelius, who's a volunteer with StreetMed STL and with our healthcare reporter here at St. Louis Public Radio, Sarah Phantom. Sarah?
And I wanted to sort of add another thing to Dr. Fornelius talking about this, which is the conditions that homeless people live in, or the unhoused people, you know, choose your adjective. I know people have their preferred ways. Is not just that, you know, the cold causes it, but the conditions that people are living in is also exacerbating it. From what I understand, it's the sort of repeated freezing and warming up can also make things a lot more difficult. It can cause extended problems when someone, as opposed to when someone is like, you know, maybe on a camping trip or hiking and they get lost and they have frostbite for a single time and they can, you know, get discharged to a nice warm house and recover there. The fact that it's happening repeatedly. Mm-hmm. And then also what I've heard is a lot of times, you know, even if somebody doesn't have an amputation, if they have been treated at a medical facility, getting discharged if you don't have a place to go to sort of recover can also extend the problem and exacerbate the condition.
Mm-hmm. Well, to that point, earlier in the show, we heard a firsthand experience with frostbite from Kevin Roberts. And Kevin lives at an encampment in the city of St. Louis. And he said he was treated last year for frostbite and ultimately lost two of his toes.
What really got mine to turn for the worse is that at the time I didn't know I had diabetes. And diabetes plays a very part, you know, very good part with your feet. And so I went to one of the St. Louis hospitals to go in to let them check it out. And my feet started unthawing. But for some reason why they didn't want me to stay longer that day, so I ended up going back into the cold, and they refroze all over again, and that's where mine really started turning to the worst of stage, because my number one and number two toe, which is the ones right next to your big toe, they stuck together. They start turning black because they're freezing and your blood circulation stops. It freezes the blood so it won't circulate, and That's painful.
And that was Kevin Roberts speaking at a homeless encampment this morning. Roberts told our producer, Danny Wisentowski, that he was able to avoid frostbite this winter, but that another resident had lost multiple toes. Doctor, what is your reaction to Kevin's situation, what he described? Is that a common sequence of events, for things to just to keep getting worse and end in amputation?
Yes. So there are two things I'd like to say on this. The first is that something that Kevin had mentioned, the presence of diabetes is one of many chronic medical problems that predispose an individual to poor circulation issues. So diabetes is a big one, congestive heart failure, peripheral arterial disease. So patients with these chronic medical problems, many of whom are unhoused, are at a much higher risk of developing frostbite. And then second, like Sarah had mentioned, the freezing and thawing repeatedly leads to worse injury. Whenever a tissue loses blood flow and then regains it, an inflammation cascade occurs in the body, which the body can overreact and cause more damage, setting you up for a situation where more damage begets more damage. Unless you can find sustained rewarming, the problem can compound itself.
Mm-hmm. What is different about treating patients in this context and gaining their trust compared to what you would find in a hospital setting?
Yeah, absolutely. So street med is kind of an inverse of a typical medical encounter, wherein if you or I needed medical services, we would intentionally go to somewhere to seek out that that care. Whereas street medicine, it's the opposite, where we are going up to places of people's where they live and soliciting services for them. And so due to historical injustices and other biases, these patients, many of them have a significant distrust of the healthcare system. And so we have found that relationships come first. One of the volunteers with Street Med, Leslie, likes to say, first the weather, then, meaning whenever we're interacting with an individual, before we talk about, I'm a doctor, how can I help you? Let me get to know you a little bit so that you can realize, we're all human and I really do actually care about your well-being. Mm-hmm. Oftentimes it's taken multiple encounters before someone will open up about their medical problems to us.
Well, and by that point, there may be a lot of damage done already.
Absolutely.
Sarah, I mentioned earlier the city's new Code Blue mm-hmm. protocol. What does that trigger?
So there are sort of like different levels of Code Blue, with the highest, I think, being level four. But basically, it's this activation plan that the city puts in place once it dips below a certain temperature. And I think when the temperature drops below, 25 degrees, it triggers warming buses, emergency beds, and then the colder it gets, the more emergency overnight beds are opened up. Something the city has said this year is that they haven't had to turn anybody away from these shelters because they haven't had enough room. And according to Peter and Paul Community Services, hundreds of individuals each night were safely transported from outdoor locations to emergency shelters during extreme cold events. And so not only do you have the emergency beds, but there are sort of what they call rally points where they pick people up and take them to the shelters, and then also warming buses as well. And so it's kind of just a ramping up of services mm-hmm. During extreme cold weather events.
So one facet of this is what the capacity is, but then another is people not necessarily wanting to go into a shelter even if there is availability.
Right. That's a question that I think a lot of people have is like, okay, well, we have all these shelter beds and reportedly we haven't had to turn people away as a city. And so why is this still happening? And there are a lot of reasons why people don't want to go to a shelter. Historically, it can be really hard to get to a shelter, even if you're relatively close, because you might need to leave your things behind. I do not know why I have a cough right at the time I have to be on live radio, you guys. I'm so sorry. It just showed up. But a lot of people have their possessions. They don't want to leave them behind. You might have a pet. I think in previous reporting, we met a woman who didn't want to leave her pet behind, her dog, because a lot of times shelters don't allow pets. I know, Dr. Fernelius, we were talking a little bit about this before. I don't know. What do you hear from people?
Yeah, no, I agree with everything that you just said. Possessions, pets, partners. When you're entering a shelter, you usually are in some dormitory style around people you may not know and may not trust. Previous traumatic experiences can certainly be, negatively influence your desire to go to a shelter. Those are a lot of the big reasons.
I talked to some people that said shelters might not feel safe, particularly if you're a woman who might have had traumatic experience in the past.
Being a woman or part of another marginalized group, LGBT patients that I see often have great reluctance to go to a shelter due to real or perceived biases that they may experience.
In our last 20 seconds or so, Dr. Fernelius, what is something that people can do to help StreetMed STL continue the work that it's doing for the winter?
Absolutely. So you can look us up, streetmedstl.org. If you have deep pockets and are interested in donations, we can do that. If you have access to a lot of materials like clothing, we can help with that. And if you are a healthcare professional and wish to volunteer with us, check out the website and you can get involved.
Dr. Josh Fernelius is a volunteer with StreetMed STL, and Sarah Fentum is STL PR's health reporter. Thank you both for joining us today.
Anytime.
Thank you.
This episode was produced by Danny Wisentowski.
Audio engineering and podcast design by Aaron Dorr.
Our executive producer is Alex Hoyer.
St. Louis on the Air is a production of St. Louis Public Radio. Understanding starts here.
Do you find yourself regularly listening to episodes of St. Louis on the Air? Suggest us to a friend you think might enjoy our conversations. And leave us a review and rating on Apple Podcasts on the App Store. It's the simplest way to help people discover our show. Thank you.
St. Louis Public Radio is a member-supported service of the University of Missouri-St. Louis.